We're talking with Ryan Burns about his new book, Shapeshifter Territory. And, you know, since the Skinwalker Ranch and the Uinta Basin have become well known for weird activity, it's they both have been a magnet, the sort of beacons for curious people and thousands of outsiders. People have decided to go check it out for themselves. Maybe they think it's a fun date or it's a whim, it's a road trip. And a lot of them have gone there and say they've seen weird stuff. Maybe it's because they wanted to see something. I make no judgment about who's telling the truth or not and who isn't, or who's exaggerating or who isn't, because there's really no way to tell. I mean, in most of these instances, there is no physical evidence. Difficulty has been reported in getting photos and getting video. Equipment malfunctions, batteries die, tools will move around or vanish, and there are other more dire consequences as well for people who go there to satisfy their curiosity. Mostly the phenomena is benign, but bad things have been known to happen to people, and things have even followed them home. In a moment, we're going to get into that with Ryan Burns as we can continue our conversation here on Coast to Coast AM. Ryan Burns, are you on a cell phone or a landline?
I'm on a cell phone.
Can you walk outside? I mean, I don't want to endanger of losing our signal, but can you walk outside and look sort of in the direction of the ranch and tell us what you're seeing?
You
kind of describe what it's like?
1 minute here.
Yeah.
Give me a second. I don't know if you can hear the coyotes.
I can. Yes, we can.
Yeah.
Are you sure that's a coyote?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm going to go by here.
So what are we looking at? What are you looking at?
It's really pretty interesting. It's almost like a horseshoe, this ridge. And the area before it, what I call the shapeshifter corridor or shapeshifter territory, is just, in my opinion, the areas that are more densely, like with brush or trees. And that seems to be where these entities like to congregate. And I think whatever these things are, they kind of need to have a sanctuary. And I believe they or it have found a sanctuary here. And I believe it's important, just because we don't completely understand what it is, that it's important to respect whatever these forces are and allow them to kind of roam the areas they prefer until we know exactly what they are.
It's so many different phenomena. It's almost like a highway or an intersection. A lot of people have guessed about portals, but yeah, it certainly seems like a lot of things from different places come in and out there. There you are out in the darkness by yourself at night in the Uinta Basin looking towards Skinwalker Ranch. I'm just wondering, you ever get a little bit frightened? I mean, because there have been some bad things that have happened to people.
You know, I don't know if I'm, I feel that these experiences in the paranormal Badlands have kind of made me who I am. And I see it sort of like my duty to take a stand against all the issues that this delicate ecosystem is facing. And I guess my fear is overcome by that.
You know, I know that the NIDS people and Bass people, and I think Adamantium, the current owners, have had problems, mischief on the part of whatever the phenomena is, sabotage, equipment that malfunctions, difficulties in taking photos and videos that have popped up. I know you've been able to get some evidence like that, but I wonder, since you set up your Space Wolf research facility, have you had intrusions by something other than just trespassers or regular folks?
Yes, almost immediately. No matter what I remember I brought a small cabin onto the property. And as soon as that happened, that very same night, and some cameras, and that very same night, three large figures jumped over the fence, which has got to be 5 feet tall, barbed wire fence, very sturdy. And my caretakers saw this as well. These three figures jumped over the fence, and they began literally playing with these cameras that I've spent a ton of money on, just literally tossing them back and forth between one another playfully. And him and another person that was there acting as security couldn't believe how quickly this had happened, and they started walking down towards this event taking place, and they were armed, and they immediately thought they were trespassers or something, and didn't believe in any of the phenomena, and said, please leave, identify yourselves, we're armed, you guys, come on. These things paid no attention. And I call them things because, as the caretakers found out in security, as they approached, they sat down on their haunches, much like a dog would, when they got near. And then they stood up, and when it looked like they were coming towards the caretaker and security, they unloaded on them. And it had no effect, zero effect. And they were in such close proximity that they were scared for themselves. These things apparently felt no bullet, nothing, and just turned around, jumped right over the fence, and ran off like it was nothing. So they've become a little bit more believing in the phenomena since then.
So it kind of reminds me of the story of the bulletproof wolf that we told in Hunt for the Skinwalker, that the Shermans, we called them the Gormans in the book, and when they were first there on the property the first day, this gigantic wolf they encounter, they shot it several times, and it just walked away, seemingly unfazed. You have some theories about that based on stories about robotic dogs. Can you share that?
Absolutely. It's very common. I've spoken with an older gentleman in his, 90s now, and he used to ride horses up on the Ridge Line and other areas right around Fort Duchesne. And as he was in his teenage years, 10 to 14 years old, if he explains it, they would see these marionette-looking dogs that would walk like they just didn't quite fit in their bodies, or robotic-looking dogs, which in that time we had no robots with that capability. And a very common and distinct feature that in this witchery way or the skinwalker tradition is that if these entities take the form of an animal, they sort of don't quite fit right. And that can encompass a large range of, I'm not saying it's one thing or another, and it's really important not to put these things in boxes. And I've never met Tom DeLong, and people laugh at Tom because he calls these the others, and a lot of the things he says, I believe, you know, when he says, if we find out what this is, we may wish we didn't. And that may be very possibly true. But it seems that whatever it or these things are can manifest in different forms and kind of mimic something that they really aren't.
I've heard stories from some of the guys who worked for Bass. They would have security guys that would, they'd come in for 10 days at a time and then go back to Las Vegas and then come in for 10 days more. And some of them didn't want to take the duty. They didn't want that duty. Some took to it like water, and they were there a lot more shifts than they would otherwise get. But a few of them, and I believe that they're stories, but a few of them, there are stories about people seeing a shape-shifting event in real time. And I'm wondering if you have seen anything like that, or if you've seen wolves that you didn't think were really wolves.
Yes. The one that sticks in my mind the most, I was with another researcher also named Ryan, and what we saw was this amorphous, I can only describe it as if you saw a million gnats or fleas or something small, almost like a nano technology, these small dark little things, and they were swirling, and they swirled into the form of a large-ish canine, just feet away from us. And that moment, when myself and this other researcher saw this, I think for both of us, that was the nail in the coffin. That was it. We were both at that point all in. And this thing formed into this dog-like, canine, wolf-like creature. And as quickly as it formed, we were both horrified. It demanifested. And was gone. So it yes, I've seen it, and it's a sight to be seen.
Any kind of so you're not there all the time. You live in Las Vegas, right?
Correct. Yep, I live in Las Vegas, and I come up monthly as often as I'm allowed to. And it is when I do come up, it's always there's always that draw, and there's the area, as you know, is it's special, and it's a hard special to describe.
Yeah, I know. There are a lot of people who come there. It's kind of like a Rorschach test. It figures you out, you know, it sizes you up. And a lot of people come there and they're scared and they have a frightening experience. Some of the people who come there who've decided to challenge it and stand up to it and tell themselves they're not afraid are the ones who seemingly have the worst experiences because something follows them home. And I'm going to ask you about that in a second. After my first couple of visits, had to admit to a group of us that were there, including Mr. Bigelow, that I always got a good feeling. And in part, that's from because Colm Kelleher had taught me sort of how to prepare. You don't go in there just without sort of girding your mental loins. Get ready. You can get in the right mindset, you know, like an openness to see whatever you want to see. But with respect and you want to learn. And it seems like that has worked in one sense, in that although I've never seen anything really weird there, I also haven't had a terrible experience as a result of bringing something home. But what about you? Have you taken anything with you when you leave?
It's interesting. I wonder sometimes, because I think you're right. This is an entity that it is interested in the observer. And I think that it is, it's so hard to describe something that you don't understand, but I believe that it is, it gets smitten. It's fascinated by the fact that some of us are interested, and it may participate in a bigger way with oneself without negating the significance of, you know, yes, I've had things happen at my house, even in Las Vegas. When I lived here in the Uinta Basin, not far from the epicenter here, it would follow me home much more frequently. And I've noticed that even in Las Vegas, that's a pretty good stretch, that there are times when my wife and I have noticed interesting things. And instead of being scared of it, I don't know if it's a scary thing. It's without a doubt, there's an energy. And I sometimes call it the force. I know others call it the others or the ancients. But it's very likely that this is an energy or an entity or beings that predate us on this planet. So they have capabilities that we're probably unaware of.
You know, one of the things that that was discussed during the NIDS period was about digging, and you get into it in your book, that at times when there would be no measurable phenomena, they'd say that one of the things that stirs it up is digging in the ground, and the Myers, who had owned the place before the Shermans or the Gormans, had this little admonition about not digging without permission. And I wondered if you had done any experiments to that effect, where you dig in the ground or disturb the ground in some way to see what happens.
In a way I did, without actually having to dig myself. And there is the closest oil rig that was placed near this area. I call it the magical mechanical mosquito. It right around 2015, 2016, I believe, right when activity popped right back up, this location that I purchased is very close to that, and it dug very deep. And so in a way I sort of embraced that, even though I'm not against oil, I'm not for oil. I mean, it's something we need. I'm against it here, but for whatever reason, it happened. And I embraced it in the fact that, okay, it happened. It is what it is. But I do believe that digging, messing with the dirt, polluting, or other acts upon these possibly elemental forces has an effect.
You mentioned about the oil rigs, and that's in your book as well, how you got to know oil workers, including some who'd been there a long time. Their business is disturbing the earth. So have they had an inordinate number of experiences or things that show up, craft, creatures?
It's interesting you mention that. Some do and some don't. Some just treat it as a job, I mean, like any job. They're putting food on the table for their families like the rest of us. And some do see things that are inexplicable. They're out there in these badland areas, and they're doing what you just mentioned. They're messing with the dirt. They're digging up the ground. And one thing we know, I mean, you dig up the ground, you're going to get things that pop up, whether that be scorpions or like with a new build or anything like that, like you find in Las Vegas. Something elemental can pop up at that point, especially if it's something you can't see. And interestingly enough, an oil worker that I've been talking to for quite some time online stopped by the property today and finally got to meet him. We had lunch. As we were walking the property, we found a deer leg, a fresh deer leg. It was in a location we had just walked. We came back just feet away from where we had been, no less than an hour later. And it was warm to the touch, practically twitching, and there's no deer. And it's these things that kind of the reality of the force or the power that whatever these entities are has. I don't know. It could have been a predator that just took it out right in front of us. We just missed it. And there was no blood. I don't know. I really don't know. The dogs on the property were acting strange. It was strange. It was hard. And that was just today. So it's hard. It's hard sometimes to explain.
There's stories in your book about encounters. I can't remember if it's the first book or the second of whether it's you or other investigators who are out and see what appears to be a dead deer or a dead elk on the side of the road. And as they approach it, it gets up and leaves, and it's not really a deer or elk.
Yeah.
You remember the case?
I personally haven't. This is known to happen. And these back roads along this area, there's a lot of commonalities within. A lot of things are seen on the roadways. Especially late at night when there's nobody else around, and they're very difficult to explain. And when you speak with locals, 50% of them will just say, whatever, I don't want to talk about it, don't want anything to do with it, with good reason. I don't blame them. But there's always that but. Everybody has a story, and it's not a matter of if you're going to see something, but when. And I think that's very, very important in this area. It's not a matter of if you're going to see it. The matter of when.
Yeah, I remember trying to get locals to talk about it, you know, in the beginning before the book came out, and it was tough. It was tough getting them to open up, but we were trying to guess how many, what percentage of people in the basin had seen things, and based on what Junior Hicks had told us, I think we were thinking of 30 or 40%, but might be a lot bigger than that. We're talking with Ryan Burns, Shapeshifter Territory. We'll be back and open up the phone lines. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're joined by Herm Groman, who worked for decades deep undercover for the FBI, taking on the mob, drug cartels, terrorists, has some great stories. For now, we've got Ryan Patrick Burns talking about his new book, Shapeshifter Territory. And Ryan, if you can hear me, you can walk back in the house. When I want you snatched up by something ominous before you get to answer the questions, we go to the phone lines right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Ryan, one more question, and then we go to the phones. You know, there had been problems during the Bigelow and Bass era trying to get images on cameras. They had cameras all over the place, and they'd occasionally get a little light here and there, but there were all kinds of problems. The cameras were sabotaged. They were, the things would move out of range. I have, it's been a year or so since I was on the ranch, and the new owners, Adamantium, have had some success. There was a lull in activity. They came in, and then things picked up again, and they've had some success getting some images, photos and video of some weird stuff. I wonder if you've been able to get any good images that you're going to share with the world, because I remember reading, I think Chris O'Brien had suggested putting a series of cameras in your facility, similar to what he's done in the San Luis Valley.
Correct. And I my hats are off to Chris O'Brien, to Ron. The UFO DAP system is the quality, and at least for me, in my small financial realm, the quality of the cameras and things are phenomenal. And I can't say enough good things about UFO DAP, if you look it up online, great stuff. To answer your question, no matter what you put out there, it seems I think about 50% of it you just have to say is not going to get anything. For whatever reason, these entities, these anomalous, phenomenal beings, whatever they are, whatever it is we're talking about, and I hate to put it in boxes, as I said, but half of whatever you put out there is either going to get trashed, not work for whatever reason, or you're going to get blurry, crummy footage. So it's a difficult task.
Let's take some calls. First-time caller, Paul in Alabama. Hi, Paul. Welcome to the program.
Thanks. Can you hear me just fine?
Yeah. What's on your mind?
Well, it's not really a question. It's actually so much of what this gentleman is saying is accurate to a similar situation I have occurred in. I haven't been to any remote kind of tribal areas or dug any graveyards up there or anything like that, but I've dipped my toes a little bit in the dark arts and have come across what you'd recognize as a djinn. All this stuff saying, the dark energy, not being able to transcribe it in anything. I mean, especially the part where it just follows you. Oh, I'm just so finagled, because it's literally like my own pet spirit thing. I don't really know what to call it.
It's your pet spirit? It follows you around?
Pretty much. Yeah, I also have to agree with the older than humanity part. I've gotten, you know, these weird head fuzzes. I don't know if you have, where it's the communication thing, like telekinesis. Some 24,000 years of existence, you know, not trying to sound like a loony, but like you said, it's hard to put a box definition on it because it's so abstract when you make an actual contact with it. And there's no other way of knowing other than just being right next to it.
You taking any photos or video or images or sound recordings, anything like that?
Nah. What I do is transcribe kind of images on the paper. So it's like how I practice my magic. I make a drawing, and then I'm able to burn it. And it's like a transcription of willpower. So, you know how you're saying dark energy, it's literally transposing energy.
Well, I'll tell you what, Paul, send us some of those drawings sometime. We'll take a look at them. We're trying to focus a little bit on the Skinwalker area, but I appreciate you sharing your stories with us. We're going west of the Rockies, Mike in Reno. Hi, Mike.
Hi, George. Let's get above the anecdotal. We seem to have here a hot spot of paranormal activity. Where are the scientists? Well, from the universities, from around the world, where is the large-scale scientific investigation of this? We're living now in the 21st century. That's a problem. Even if the film doesn't show anything, that is evidence. Where's Randy? Where are you and others calling these people out to get up there, stake it out, stay there a year? This is what scientists live for. My second question is, and I hate to bring this up, where is the military? And did I hear you say you have had no unusual experience? Did I pick up that correctly?
Well, I've never seen anything on the ranch that I would call paranormal, no. But and you're preaching to the choir there, Mike. You're saying the same things that several of us have pounding the same drum. Several of us have pounded for a number of years. I guess you're not familiar with sort of the history of the ranch, but that was NIDS went in with scientific guns blazing. Bigelow owned the property for 20 years, put cameras and scientists and equipment on there, and science got its butt kicked, basically. Bass was a government-funded operation. The Defense Intelligence Agency, Pentagon, had approved the money, and one of its functions was to study the ranch and the area around the Uinta Basin. And they learned a lot, but didn't end up solving the mystery. You're right. Science should be there. They should be interested in it. But as NIDS found out, they don't really have any conclusions. Writing a scientific paper and getting it put into a science journal and published would be impossible, because the amount of evidence that would convince the scientific community that this is real is hard to find. Ryan, your take on that?
Absolutely agree, 100%. I believe Bigelow was a complete visionary, and he attacked this in a way that is unprecedented. And it's difficult, Mike. It's a tough thing. And quantum physics is the best thing in providing us with the best rules that inform us about the ways in which these things fit together and how these systems may ultimately work in the end.
I would also point out there is an study and investigation underway. The company that bought the property in 2016, they put a lot of money into cameras and equipment and security gear at the property and are trying to figure this out. And as I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, they have succeeded in getting some images. Now, proving what those images are, what the source of them are, is a tough challenge. But I think there is progress being made. There is work underway, and we can all hope there's going to be more of it. Thanks for calling. East of the Rockies, Kurt in Pennsylvania. Hi, Kurt.
Hello. Mr. Burns, Mr. Knapp, it's an honor to be on the air with you too.
What's on your mind?
The question I have for you both is, as a skeptic, this has really shook me. And the question is, I figure this could be, three possibilities. One, the Skinwalker has evolved with the Earth. Two, it could be from, aliens, possibly planted by a UFO. Or three, supernatural explanation, like ghosts or demons. I'll take my question off the air. Thank you guys so much. This show has been great.
Thanks. Ryan, do you have a preference there on those options?
I think those are great options, Kurt. It's difficult because as humans, we try to analyze these systems, and it has a lot to do with our consciousness, which seems to be a dynamic in the system. And what I'm finding, and I'm no scientist, but there are boundaries, and you have to stay so you have to stay so open-minded. The words of Jacques Vallée just emanate every time I try to analyze any of this. And we have to consider that there are scenarios we are not aware of yet.
One thing that we haven't talked about in this show, I've told this story before on the air and in public about the dog men. And, when we wrote that book in 2005, I didn't know about dog men, so the story was so outlandish that we debated whether to ever make it public or not. It was the only one that we did have that debate about. The police officers, two Indian Ute tribal officers, had come around the corner and seen these two guys standing on the side of the road wearing trench coats, smoking cigarettes. And when they turned around, they had dog faces. And I thought that was pretty preposterous at the time. But since then, Linda Godfrey, all kinds of dog men reports all over the country. Have you heard dog men reports that you consider to be credible, or have you seen one yourself in or around the ranch?
Yeah, to a smaller amplitude. I mean, Linda Godfrey she's done an amazing job, but there is something going on, and there is an increase exponentially with the attention that this is gathering from the media and otherwise that is kind of not good. It's sort of a decay. And I only say that because those in the whether real or unreal realms of this occult practice, just the attention that it is gathering has induced, I've just noticed this on my own, has induced more and more followers into these darker arts or these covens, if you want to call it that, of these practices that tend to lead to this shape-shifting. It's a double-edged sword, and I understand why it is so ignored, because there is a definite, it's one of those things, you add fuel to the fire, it grows. But yes, there are still cases, a lot of cases, of people witnessing that, George.
So you write in your book an example of Aleister Crowley, who went to the desert seeking knowledge, used dark arts, and out pops this thing that looks like a big-headed alien, right? As sort of an example of, I guess that could be an example of what you're talking about there, is that people are drawn to this mystery, and some of them are turning to sort of the dark side, messing with Ouija boards or incantations and things of that sort to invoke whatever it is. Seems risky.
Mm-hmm. It is.
You haven't gone down that road yourself, or have you?
Well, the desert, like you said, the high desert in this case in Utah, a friend of mine has called in, and his name is Isaac Weisop. He has a bunch of occult books and things of that nature. He studies this as a very serious thing. And the desert has been called the great teacher historically, and it has a dark connotation. And this particular high desert, I think, is no different. It's just one of those rabbit holes that, be careful. You can put your toes in, you can put your leg in. Just make sure that you're grounded. And going back to Paul, the first caller, I think that's very important to what he's looking into and experiencing. Just make sure that you're grounded, because if you're not grounded, then the consequences can be catastrophic.
Speaking of grounded, what about underground? You know, we haven't touched on that, but the story had always been that there's something underground. The Gormans had heard it and felt it rumbling like an underground railroad or something, or steel mill noises, lights would come out of the ground. Have you had any of those kinds of experiences, and what do you make of it? Is there something underground in or around the ranch, tunnels, facilities, labs, bases?
It's difficult to say with certainty. However, Mr. McMonagle, a great remote viewer, I'm very into the remote viewing, and I have a lot of respect for people in that genre, especially Hal Puthoff, Angela Thompson Smith, a lot of these individuals. Mr. McMonagle was sure without a doubt that there was some sort of underground something taking place in especially the southwest portion of the area here, known as the Shapeshifter Corridor, whatever you want to call it. I do believe that there is the possibility that it's there. Yes, absolutely, George, to answer your question, yes. The question is yes. The answer is yes, I'm sorry. There are cases with the settlers who purchased the properties here in this area through not the best of methods. They had a big cookout, more or less, and got a bunch of the Native Americans with free booze all the way around. And the first thing that the ones who did sell their properties, the Mormon settlers who purchased, one of their main concerns after purchasing the properties were the sounds coming from underground. And this is highly documented in newspaper articles, et cetera, of the time, that they were very concerned with these mechanical sounds coming from beneath the earth. So there is not only historical evidence, but current evidence that I can't go completely into, but there is scientific proof that there is seismological activity taking place underneath this area.
We only have a couple of minutes. I wanted to ask you about Dark Canyon. You know, it took us, took me at least a long time to develop good friendships with the members of the Ute tribe. We've got a guy, Corey, I think you might know Corey, who has helped us immensely. The last time I was there, he and a friend took us out to, with permission from the tribe, to Dark Canyon. And, you know, the ridge above the ranch is known as Skinwalker Ridge. It's the path of the Skinwalker. But Dark Canyon was what we were told is the place where this thing, whatever it is, actually lives. So we went there. I didn't know if you had had that experience or what you think about that story.
Yes. And, yeah, Corey's awesome. The wilderness, known as the Dark Canyon, it's a long-haul hike for sure. And there are two Dark Canyons, which interestingly are both involved, but it's a very difficult area, as you know, a very primitive area. And this continuous forest or path, as you termed it so well, so it's the path of the Skinwalker, it moves in a very southeasterly to northwesterly direction. And it seems to move in along those pathways that lead to Dark Canyon. Absolutely.
Well, Ryan, I thank you for being here. Shapeshifter Territory is the name of the book. A lot of good stories in there and personal firsthand accounts, and I wish you well with it and hope you'll keep us in mind with whatever project comes next.
Thank you so much, George. I appreciate your unrelenting dedication to the subject matter, and I know many of us appreciate that. Thank you for having me on.
Well, stay safe up there. You never know what's lurking out in the darkness other than coyotes. We'll talk to you again. Coming up next, Herm Groman, a deep undercover agent for the FBI, amazing adventures, including the case of White Boy Rick. We go into the break with Green Day.